Welcome to a special episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And if you listened to our last episode of the show, we took a look at The Velocipastor, a movie that I did not expect to like as much as I did, and neither did my co-host for the episode, Josh Bell. But we had a lot of fun with it and had a great conversation. We put it out there and ended up getting in touch with the film's writer-director, Brendan Steer. And Brendan was so awesome to come and have a great little conversation with us about indie filmmaking and B-movies and schlocky horror and parodies and the inspirations for The Velocipastor. So this is a great little conversation. I hope you guys enjoy it. And before we get into it, I do want to remind you to please make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice. And you can also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. I'll remind you of a bunch of other stuff to do after the conversation, but for now, let's get into it. All right, so with me right now, we have got the director of The Velocipastor. We've got Brendan Steer. Brendan, thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm stoked. I'm excited.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. I mean, you know, you heard our conversation on the main episode. I mean, this is a movie that, you know, neither of us really even expected to necessarily check out when it came out, but yeah. we're both very glad that we did. And there's so much, like, you know, so clearly that seems to have, you know, inspired you in places that I don't think I was expecting when I went into it, you know?
Yeah. Thank you so much. It's definitely a movie that loves movies. So
yes, absolutely.
There's a lot to talk about with it, for sure.
Oh, for sure. Well, before we get into the movie itself, why don't you tell people a little about yourself and your filmmaking journey so far?
Yeah, for sure. I'm originally from Montana. I did a lot of my growing up in Pennsylvania.
I don't know
why I just pronounced it that way. It's called Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. That's how I usually say it.
That's the native accent, really. Yeah. I went to college in New York. I moved to L.A. I lived in Paris and Berlin for a year, and now I'm back in L.A. In terms of filmmaking, this is my second feature. I did a feature in 2014 called Animosity, which is a very dour, dark horror film. You would not, they do not make a complimentary double feature. it is, they're coming from very different places in my brain. But I quite like Animosity. And we had some success with that. We played at a Fantasia in Montreal. It's out on Amazon if you want to watch it. Things like that. And yeah, it has not done one 40th of the press Velocipastor has. So it's just been a wild, unexpected ride with this movie.
So when you first did the trailer, I'm assuming that was after Animosity came out?
Actually, it was before. The original trailer was a film school project.
Okay.
And Animosity was my film school thesis.
Okay.
We were not supposed to do a feature. I did not expect to sell a student film, and here we are. So, I did the original trailer back in, like, I think we shot in 2010. It came out in 2011. Mm-hmm. Because if I remember correctly, we shot in, like, November. It was, like, one of those deals. So the original trailer came out, and it did well. Like, especially in comparison to everything else I had done at the time. Like, sure. Every other video on my channel had, like, you know, 30 views.
Right.
All of a sudden, here was one that had, like, 30, 40,000. So, it was, especially to me at the time, I was like, I've made it. Like, this is finally success.
I get it, man.
But it was like, you know, I was a film school kid. I didn't want to do the silly dinosaur movie. I wanted to be Ingmar Bergman. So, I knew there was an audience for the short film, and I knew I was proud of it. And we tried to kickstart it once or twice, and it didn't work. So I wanted to focus on more serious movies. I made a more serious movie. And then after that, it was a couple of years of kind of angsting over what movie two would be. because I knew in my heart I really wanted to make the Velocipaster. And it was a bit of a struggle to like get myself there and sort of accept that movies can just be fun. Like brightening somebody's day is reason enough for a movie to exist. It doesn't need to have this crazy obtuse metaphor attached to it. It sure. can just be a dinosaur priest movie. And after I cracked that, you know, I launched into Velocipaster with all my might. And here we are.
And most of the story was already there, right?
Yes.
I mean, as far as like what it was going to be. Now, one thing that, and you know, I'm going to be asking you a few questions before we get into inspirations and all that stuff, which is the main idea of the show here. But, you know, one question, something that both my co-host for the episode, Josh, and I, you know, again, we're a little surprised by and we're really happy about, is that this kind of works almost more as like a parody of these kind of like, you know, B horror movie kind of things than actually just being one, which is what we kind of expected it to be in the first place. Was that like the intention going in when doing the trailer? Were you like, let's skewer these kind of like B horror movie things, or were you just like trying to play into the schlock? Like, what was it?
It's like, the answer is it's somewhere in the middle. It's like I did intend for it to be a funny parody.
Yeah.
Like, so first and foremost, it's not a room situation where I like made a movie and then I'm trying to rebrand it.
Yeah.
No. It was always intended to be funny. But I didn't, it was really important to me, very deeply important to me for this movie, to not come from a cynical place with it. It was less about like making fun of those movies and more about just sort of celebrating what I loved about them.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think that, so I guess it's like the nicest parody possible, I guess, is basically what I can say.
It's funny you say that, yeah. Because, like, you know, I've had this conversation a lot lately about how, like, the spoof is kind of, like, died off. And I think a big part of the reason is because they stopped celebrating the movies that they were parodying. Yeah, they just became like, oh, let's just make fun of every pop culture thing and just, like, just totally tear it to shit, you know?
Right, exactly. And it's like, you know, we've, for very obvious reasons that I get, we get compared to Sharknado a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't love Sharknado. I've seen it two or three times just to see if I could like get it. I think I saw the sequel as well. And it's just, there's something cynical about it. Like
right.
I don't want to just shit on that movie. I might be totally off base, but it feels very much like nobody likes those movies. They were doing it for like kind of an easy internet click.
Sure.
And we've gotten bad reviews for Velocipaster. It's totally fine. It's not a movie for everybody. The only time a bad review bothers me is when they accuse us of wanting to do the same. Because I devoted 8 years of my life to this project. And I'm kind of like, I would have given up a long time ago if it was just about that. And things like Airplane and Black Dynamite were definitely like paramount top of my list. Like, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to laugh at the movie a little, but like laugh with it more so, and sort of just celebrate that messiness that kind of makes us human. Like, that's why I like bad movies. It's people say it's about watching someone fail, and I guess a little bit that's true, but it's more about, I think it has two appeals. It's watching movies break, because that's always just funny when you've come to expect them to be so polished and so sort of focus grouped, and like, you know, it went through 15 editors because Disney needed it to look like a Star Wars. Like, you're used to seeing that. So it's always fun to kind of see the movie disintegrate in front of you.
Sure.
And honestly, a lot of those bad movies, they're kind of succeeding. Like, they are presenting you with a very idiosyncratic worldview, and it comes across as silly, but they really achieved something. There's pathos in good, bad movies.
Sure.
Especially in something like The Room. Like, just to once again use it as an example. It is genuinely an auteur film. Like, yeah. Like, it's crazy, but goddamn, Tommy Wiseau really does invite you into his world for 2 hours, and it is very successful in doing that.
Yeah,
a drama, but
yeah, I would say, like, honestly, it is one of my most watched movies, and that's not going to happen if a movie is just simply bad.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's like, there's a reason we return to these movies, and it's because there is a spark, there's life, and there's love in a good bad movie. And that's why, like, you know, I don't even know how many times I've seen The Room, and I, you know, do not have a hankering to watch, you know, Sharktopus, because I'm just, maybe it's great, I'd give it a shot, but I just, I really don't think anybody loved that movie. And I just don't, the worst thing you can do, especially with a lower budget, is not care. And it's like, I don't, that's the only time I feel like I'm wasting my time on a movie at any budgetary scale, which is just if they just did not want to do it.
So caring is a good transition into my next question, which is, you finally decide, all right, we're going to go back to this thing and turn it into a feature. Like, how long of a process was it once you really were, because it was obviously 8 years, you know, from the get go, but once you actually were starting to put this thing, you know, through the process of making it into a feature, what was the, how long, and was it really difficult to actually, you know, make it happen?
Yeah. It's a hard question to answer, because I sort of would on and off start a script for it, starting in 2011. And it was about 4 or 5 years of doing that. I think I started the script like 6 times, and I would get like 20, 30 pages in and just hate it. Like, it just was not fun. And I was still coming at it from that very film school mentality of like, but what am I saying about like Christianity and like what sect is it? Because, you know, they all are very different from each other.
Sure.
And I was like doing that kind of thing. And then one day, kind of like I said before, I had this lightning bolt of realization of just being like, this is a movie about a priest who turns into a dinosaur. Like chase that fun. And that is reason enough for the movie to exist. And so the final shooting script I wrote in 2 days. So it took like 5 years to get to those 2 days. But like basically it was locked from that point on. It was just such a ballistic missile of like things I liked. Sure. And so there were some minor changes to it, of course, afterwards. It probably took, I think we tried to kickstart it again or to crowdfund it, I should say. And it didn't work. And so eventually my friend's mom knew I wanted to make this movie. And she asked me how much money I was looking for, because she might know this person.
Mm.
And you hear that a lot when you're a filmmaker. So, you know, I sent her the script and I sent her the lookbook and all the materials. And I didn't think much of it. And 2 days later, she called back and said the person was willing to invest the entire amount in the movie and that the movie was funded. And that was how I got it made. Through somebody I have never met and still never spoken to.
Oh, so you don't even know if they like it.
I have been trying to get it to them. I know that they are a young Chinese woman, and I think they forgot they invested in a film. I think that they are so China rich that to them, $35,000 was just like nothing. Because
I need to go find one of those right now.
She lives in Berlin. I can tell you that from her Instagram, and that is the only interaction I've ever had with her. Every time we've like gotten her attention, she just has seemed so deeply disinterested in the fact that she funded a movie. So, you know, I've done my due diligence, and if she wants to participate, she is more than welcome to.
That is fantastic. It kind of makes your mind start to wonder about how many like weird, crazy movies she has funded.
It might be money laundering. I'll be honest. Like, I've hit that point of being like, all right, well, whatever. But yep. That is how we got it funded. And so we shot for 2 weeks. Post took like 2 or 3 months. And then we premiered in 2017 in Portland.
So 2017, I'm trying to remember, and this is the next thing I wanted to ask you, is I'm trying to remember when, you know, the title and everything mm-hmm. went like kind of viral and everything. How, like, was it done at that point? Was it already like in distribution? Like, was it getting its distribution deal and everything?
No, not yet. It was, well, we released the poster and we released the trailer and the synopsis and stuff back in 2017. And, you know, it buzzed a little. It got talked about, but certainly not to the extent it would be. But the thing that, you know, studio coordinators talk. Festival coordinators talk. And so I think I ended up submitting to like 4 or 5 festivals, and we ended up playing at like 30. Because like they kept sharing it amongst each other, and I kept getting these emails from festival coordinators kind of being like, hey, we heard about your movie, we'd love to see a screener. And, you know, you just keep sending it out, and they kept responding positively. So after a while, we were approached by a distribution company. We were approached by several. And so we finally went with Wild Eye because they seemed like the most above the board dudes, and it seemed like it was very much in their lane, and they just seemed like a great fit.
Yeah.
And they were. They have been. So what ended up happening was I think we signed with them late 2018 because it takes a while for it to sort of proliferate.
Sure.
And we signed with them late 2018. They released their revamped poster and a revamped trailer on April 20th, the day before Easter, which I think was just, I would love to shake the hand of whoever came up with releasing the VelociPastor Easter weekend on 420. So it just, that was when it exploded.
Oh yeah.
And that is probably when you heard about it. It was like,
I think so. Now that you mention it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was so strange because, like, you know, part of what's been so surreal about this is like, you know, we wrapped in 2016. So it's like, to me, I'm like, I love this movie, but to me, I'm like, yeah, I made that like 3 years ago.
Right.
And it's just kind of surreal. I'm so happy it's finding an audience now, but it's just funny. It's, life is a mysterious journey, let me tell you.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, why don't we get into some of these movies, these puzzle pieces, as we call them here, the movies that we thought may have inspired you. You already did bring up Black Dynamite. I was going to bring that one up. Also, Grindhouse, both as a film and just as a genre in general. These are definitely, it sounds like, things that were major influences for you.
Absolutely. Especially Black Dynamite. That movie was like, I think it's overselling it a little now, but I would say to people during filming that movie is our Bible, and it's the only movie I made all of them watch.
Nice.
Because I was like, this is what they're doing for blaxploitation is what I want to do for that kind of Z-grade horror and exploitation film. And I just think, like, you know, Black Dynamite is just a brilliant movie. I think it is so funny. And one of the rare comedies that succeeds almost every minute of its screen time. I just love it. So that was a huge, huge influence. Grindhouse, yes. A little more esoterically. Because I would say, actually, that Grindhouse was a bigger influence on the original trailer. That was more around the time of Grindhouse. It was definitely part of the spark to do it. Like the idea that you could make a short film that is shaped like a trailer and that it's a fake trailer and that's like sort of a viable means for a narrative. That is, of course, directly ripped from Grindhouse. I was also watching just a lot of Trailers from Hell, this website, back then. And so I was just having all these Grindhouse titles tossed at me. So when I saw VelociPastor, or like when that came to my brain, it just, everything sort of clicked where I was like, oh, that sounds like one of these movies.
Sure.
And just that whole genre for sure, just exploitation cinema is of course a huge influence on both versions.
Is that autocorrect story true?
It is very true. It is absolutely true. And it's like that is where, that's why when my phone autocorrected Velociraptor to VelociPastor, Yeah. That, like I said, I had just seen Grindhouse. I'm a huge Tarantino guy, and Rodriguez. And so that was on my brain. Trailers from Hell was on my brain. So when I looked at my phone and I saw Velocipastor, I was just like, that's a movie. and so, yeah, I think definitely on the final film, there's bits of Grindhouse in there for sure. I mean, I think that you just sort of fold those influences into yourself after a while. So it's for sure in there. But I will say that during filming, I wasn't thinking about Grindhouse much. I was thinking much more about, you know, things like Monty Python and Airplane and Black Dynamite.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, I'm going to go to another one, which was Orgasmo and the films of Trey Parker. You know, especially with this narrative, like I was saying on the main episode, of just, you know, this guy who's just like this religious guy who, you know, everyone's kind of telling him that he should be using these powers, even though they're so ungodly and everything. And he's always got that one foot still stuck back in religion. And that seems to be something that's gone through a bunch of Trey Parker stuff, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, it has. And you know what's funny is I have never seen Orgasmo. I've had a couple of people bring it up now, and I love South Park. Mm-hmm. I for years I was like a pretty devout viewer of it. Yeah. And I will say definitely his writing for sure. Him and Matt Stone, I think that they have a really genuinely good ability when they want to sure. make very clever commentary on things.
Yeah.
Just some episodes of South Park, I think, are just some of the most brilliant comedy writing I've ever seen. The Trapped in the Closet is just an amazing screenplay. And you know, I definitely took a lot of that in. But I shockingly have never, besides the South Park movie, I have never seen one of their feature films. I've never seen Basketball, and I've never seen Team America. They've been on my, and or Orgasmo, they've been on my list for years. Yeah. And I just haven't gotten to them yet. I would love to, because I'm sure that they are brilliant.
Also, the Book of Mormon musical, incredible as well.
I'm sure I would love it. Yeah. And it's one of those things where I'm just like, yeah, I don't have an excuse. I just haven't seen it yet.
I know that feeling.
Yeah, but it is funny because definitely things like that are definitely influences. Just not that one in specific, I would say.
Sure.
A lot of Orgasmo adjacent stuff.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, and then of course we kind of spun off of that into the trauma films, which you know that kind of brings another level of. You know, kind of at the same time as being adjacent to Trey Parker, it's adjacent to the, you know, the so bad it's good B-movie horror type things, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I definitely, it's funny, there are very few trauma films I really adore. But sure. I admire their ethos. Mm-hmm. Like I really have respect for that sort of scrappy DIY, make your own damn movie kind of mentality. Yeah. That was why I also gravitated towards Rodriguez when I was, you know, first starting out being interested in film, because that sort of demystification of what it's like to make a movie and mm-hmm. what you need to make a movie, I found very appealing.
Right.
And so both Kaufman and you know, Rodriguez have that in them, and they're not always good, but sure. they always swing. And I admire that. So
do a lot with a little.
Exactly. And I also admire from Troma the unapologetic nature of how low budget it is. Like that becomes part of the appeal. And that definitely I took as an influence, where it's like there's, you know, when you're operating with a budget that low, you have two options, which is try and hide it or embrace it. Sure. And so I always respected movies more that would embrace it. And so I chose to do so as well. That was part of the reason also that there is the punk music in it.
Sure.
Because I thought that maybe they had sort of a shared DIY ethos. So
that also brings to mind Kevin Smith a little bit as well.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And that is He is another filmmaker that I'm like, he's not always great, but dude, nothing but respect for his work ethic. Like, he does it. He makes whatever the hell he wants to and doesn't really care. And I have respect for that.
Totally. Absolutely. Well, another movie that we brought up was American Werewolf in London, which I think, you know, again, you know, to go to just the straight up the character progression and all that, I think kind of mirrors it in some ways.
Yeah, that one I agree with. I love American Werewolf in London. And it was definitely the humor, too. The fact that Landis blends a lot of humor into it. Of course, American Werewolf is a much more serious film, but but there's that idea there of you know the were creature being representative of the character's inner struggle and sort of inner demons, if you will. All sort of werewolf narratives. It's like I love the Wolfman too. Both versions, to be dead honest with you.
All right.
I actually like Joe Johnston as a director, and I was in for the 2010 version. the 40s one in particular. Is, of course, another big influence. Also, because it's a bit goofy. So I wanted to, that one, maybe even more so than American Werewolf or the Joe Johnston Wolfman, the original 40s one with Lon Chaney Jr. Because it has that sort of, you know, serious, we're taking this stuff serious. And it's just so, Lon Chaney sucks. And it's just so funny to, like, see him trying to, like, emote and like really act this stuff out, and he just can't, and it's wonderful. I also think that casting Claude Rains as his dad is one of the most baffling miscasts in the history of film. Like, Lon Chaney Jr. stands like 2 feet taller than Claude Rains does. They have different accents. I just got a lot of questions, I wanted to, on a more meta level, I wanted people to sort of go through some of that process with Velocipastor. Like, I wanted them to see the awkwardness and have questions about it. Like, that's part of the fun to me, is that you turn to your buddies and you're sort of like, do they know ninjas aren't Chinese? And it's like I want people to do that. That's part of what makes the movie so fun, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. As I was watching it, you know, I definitely, there's a kind of a level of discovery as you're going through it, to where you're starting to kind of get on board, you know, you're like, oh, this isn't what I thought it was going to be at all. This is insane.
Exactly. And I will say, the people, I'm very happy that the narrative surrounding Velocipastor so far, the consensus seems to be, oh shit, it's really good. And like, I'm very proud of that. The fact that it sort of is a surprise to people. I think that is just half the fun of it. And, you know, I am not a lot of filmmakers I know are sort of like really stentorian about like, no, you got to see it in a theater or something like that. Like, they're very venue centric.
I'm actually one of those myself, but alas, I had to watch it at home. So,
Well, and I will say this. I just don't care as much. At the end of the day, I'm here to see a story. So I want to see it in the best way possible, but if the only way available to me is on my television, I'm going to watch it on my TV. I'm not going to wait 5 years to see it in like 65 millimeter or something.
Sure.
But I will say, for Velocipastor, the only venue specific thing that I think is important is to watch it with people. Like, and in a theater, that's probably the best place you can do that. But even if you're at home, like, get your girlfriend, get your wife, get your buddies. It's like, that is the best way to see the film, because then you'll be interacting with it in the way that I want you to, because you'll be talking to the people next to you and kind of being like, what is happening?
Yeah.
And like that to me is half the fun. I think people can have a lot of fun watching it alone, but I think if they have the option to watch it with people, they should take it. Like make make it a party night. Screw it. Why not? It's a movie to be enjoyed.
I think that's absolutely right. 100%. And there's just so much like what the fuck as you're watching it that I mean you're all going to be interacting a lot. Like you're just not going to be able to help it.
Yeah. And that to me is the beyond that, the sort of venue doesn't matter. Just be with people. And I think that is the way to say it. That is my official recommendation as writer, director, editor, and producer.
I like it. Well, I'm going to ask you about one more that we had brought up, and then we'll see if you have any specifics that you want to mention. But, you know, we already kind of touched on Sharktopus as well as Sharknado. And then also we had mentioned Snakes on a Plane as well. But again, just kind of going back to those movies, you know, where there's like a title first and then a movie that comes next. More so than whether or not they inspired you, I was actually wondering, do you have any favorites per se?
That's a really good question. I didn't hate Snakes on a Plane. Mm-hmm. I don't hate it. It's fine. Yeah. you know, actually, one of the ones that oh my God, the title just went away from me. Yeah, Birdemic. I think that Birdemic is worth it. That one is actually terrific. And has that bad movie quality I really crave. And it's another one where I think they like retroactively tried to market it as a comedy.
Sure.
It's very obviously supposed to be like a creature feature. But it is just so funny. It has some of my favorite lines. The CGI is, of course, just the stuff of legend.
Oh, yeah.
And I think everybody in the movie does just the best they can. but it is funny because that Birdemic within itself is just a terrific case study of it. Because the first one rules. I love that first Birdemic. And the second one sucks. And I hate that second Birdemic. Because it's like they're trying to like capture the self-awareness, I guess.
That's the worry. Yeah,
they're just not doing it. And it's like, I had so much existential angst going into VelociPastor that I would end up like one of those movies. I get why people think we're one of those movies.
and we
very much position ourselves to sort of be. But I was every day on set. That was the main worry, is just like how... is this coming from the right place? How far can you push this bad until it's just bad? Until it's like just unenjoyable schlock. And you really got to ride that line. It's kind of a tonal balancing act, but in every aspect of it. In the acting, in the editing, in the cinematography, in the production design. Every single part of it has to answer that question correctly. And it was something I put an enormous amount of mental energy towards when we were shooting. Because I really didn't want it to be... I really didn't want it to turn out like one of those movies. I think it would have really crushed me if it did. So, that I will say that I think Birdemic is probably my favorite of those. And I will, of course, speak up if another one pops into my head.
Sure.
But that one is one that I actually own and return to. And that's more than I can say for a lot of the other ones.
Yeah, right. Right on. Well, so I mean, speaking of, you know, influential movies, is there anything, I mean, we kind of peppered in a few along the way. You mentioned Airplane, you know, and like, are there any other movies that were like big inspirations for you while going through this project that we didn't bring up?
Yes. There are two or three in particular that are like really essential, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys did an amazing job getting the big ones.
Right on.
Probably the biggest one, and why would anybody think this, but probably the biggest influence besides Black Dynamite was this Japanese movie called House, or Houseu, from the late 1970s.
Okay.
And It is just one of the most endlessly inventive movies I have ever seen. It's in my top five movies of all time. And it what I wanted to take from it was this around in when you're watching Haosu, literally around every scene, it's like a new idea. It's just like tossing things at you constantly. It is hell-bent on entertaining you, but not scaring you. Like, it's a horror movie ostensibly, but it just does not seem to care about that at all. Right. And I really identified with this sort of, both this excitement that comes from that kind of discovery, and this sort of weird, occasionally uncomfortable blending of genres, and at least blurring of genre lines.
Sure.
Like Velocipastor is sort of a horror comedy, but there's very little horror in there, really, outside of sort of the genre trappings.
Yeah.
And it's a comedy where we're going to have a very tender 4-minute sex scene that has no jokes.
Yeah.
And like, it's that really appealed to me. That sort of, like I said, blending of genres and ideas.
Cool.
Primarily the sensation of constantly being surprised and on your back heel kind of thing. There are two anime that really inspired it.
Okay.
And they are Evangelion and Fooly Cooly, FLCL. Mm-hmm. FLCL more so. It's the 6-episode anime from like 1999, around there. And it is just a shot of adrenaline. It is one of the most kinetic pieces of media I've ever seen. And it's only 6 episodes long, so essentially it's a 2.5-hour movie.
Right.
And it is, two things came from that, which are the music. In all of Fooly Cooly, the director only used one alt-rock band. They're called The Pillows. And it just felt so vital and different and cool. Like, there's almost no incidental music in it besides those 4-3 Japanese guys in that band. And I read an interview with the director where he said, you know, there's a lot of weird stuff in that series. People are using guitars as, like, guns, and it's got this alt-rock score, and it's about, like, this alien and all this stuff. But it's also a really deep metaphor for sexual awakening. And I read this interview with the director where they were asking him, like, where did all the weird stuff come from? And he was like, oh, I just put in a lot of stuff I liked, honestly. I figured that people would just get it. And that, especially when I was writing, that was a huge part of it for me, is that when it came time to pick the music for Velocipastor, I followed that philosophy. Where I was kind of like, I just love these songs, and I'm just going to present them, and people can love them or not love them.
Sure.
But this part of it is for me, kind of thing. And I hope that at the very least they'll connect with the intentionality of that.
Sure.
And the kineticism of FLCL is just like 25 minutes of that are like 4 episodes of any other show. And I wanted to replicate that, where it's like, I will say I succeeded better than I thought I would, because I have seen this film at a lot of festivals now, and like, you know, sometimes you step out, you have to go to the bathroom or something. I don't even know how many times I've seen Velocipastor. And I'll like step out to go to the bathroom or whatever, and when I come back, I have never had the thought of like, oh, we're still here.
Something else is happening.
I'm always like, when did we get to Vietnam? I was gone for like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And the answer is, yeah, you were gone for 2 minutes and now we're in Vietnam. And I'm very proud of that, and I love that. The biggest influence from the other anime, Evangelion, is the editing style. There's a moment in the end of Evangelion, where a character's mind essentially breaks, and the editor for the film goes through like almost 3 minutes of every single frame being a different shot, and it is an assault. It's supposed to be. It's supposed to sort of, you know, it's doing it kind of abstractly, but it's showing you what he feels like through editing. Which is not something that a lot of people do, but I always thought it was really cool and interesting. And I really internalized that, where it's like, it shows up in the sex scene very obviously, but like,
Yeah.
Throughout the entire movie, I'm just sort of like, there's 24 frames every second. Use them. Like, you have so much stuff to play with there.
Sure.
And that montage in particular in the end of Evangelion, where they go through that, I of course applied that to the sex scene in Velocipaster. But that editing ethos has just been part of what I do for a long time. Like, it's a tool. It's just like cinematography. You can use it to portray an idea somewhat abstractly, but people get it. And sure. That was the first thing that really opened my eyes to that. Go figure, it's an anime show and not like a Godard film.
Right.
But you know what? We get it. We get our inspiration from wherever it may knock. So
Exactly. It's just this a big, you know, smorgasbord of just all these different places that they come from.
Yeah. And yeah. That was the last one. I knew there was one I was missing.
Okay.
It's Shaun of the Dead by Edgar Wright.
Oh.
And nice. Scott, just all of Edgar Wright, really.
Yeah.
Like, he's one of my favorite working directors. One of the most talented filmmakers in the world, in my opinion. And I love the way he approaches comedy. Where very rarely is it like crass or puerile or cruel, and very often is it just funny. And I really...
Right.
And of course, he also works in blending genres a whole bunch. He works on this whole sliding scale of serious versus humorous. And I think the way he navigates that is better than any other director I know. And since I knew I was going to be operating kind of in the same space, I mean, I was an early adopter of him. He's been a hero for years and years. So yeah, so everything by him, but I would say particularly Shaun of the Dead and Scott Pilgrim.
I'm actually surprised that we didn't say that one right there. So yeah,
yeah, I have met him twice, and
nice.
I embarrassed myself deeply both times.
Oh.
It was not his fault. It was all on me. He's one of the few people I get like starstruck around genuinely. And so both times I was just tripping over myself and one day I hope to meet him and not look like a dildo. So it will hopefully happen because until then I can just adore his work. All of it I love.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope you do get to have that good meeting with him sometime.
Same though, for real.
Yeah. So I think that about does it. I'm curious, what are you now? I mean, obviously you're doing a bunch of press and stuff for this. Now it's finally out there and people are receiving it pretty well.
They are.
What do you just keep doing this for a while, or do you have another project you're working on already?
Yeah, I'm in the process of writing two different films. Well, because once again, like, the press is taking up a lot of my time and a lot of my energy, which is great. Like, honestly, I would never for one second complain about the attention this movie is getting. I am aware how freakishly lucky we are, and I am just very happy about that. But yeah, it takes up a lot of time and energy. And the writing hasn't been going as fast as I would have hoped. I don't know if one of those will be next. I have a couple, like four or five other feature scripts unproduced in my back pocket, with varying degrees of seriousness.
I was just about to ask, are they like half serious, half let's ride this line for a little
kinda,
while?
Kinda, yeah. There was, So my co-writer and I wrote my favorite of them that is unproduced is this movie called Prom Hotel from Hell,
nice.
Which is just a blast. And it's like if for some reason I was given a blank check and they were like, you have a year to live, that is the movie I would make.
Nice. I did music for a movie called Bus Party to Hell, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. I adore that script. And so that would be, in a perfect world, that would be the one I would want to chase next. Unfortunately,
it's also the most expensive script.
So we will see. I think that I might have to you know, do another project or two in between before I can actually get the budget that I need to for that one.
Sure.
In terms of what I am going to chase next, I mean, honestly, at this point, the movie just came out. So I'm going to wait a little bit. I'm going to keep working on the scripts. I'm going to wait a little bit and honestly see what opportunities shake out. I think that hopefully this will open some doors for us. We just got to see what's on the other side. So yeah.
Hell yeah. Well, I had a great time talking to you. I want to ask one more question about the movie.
Yeah,
something
for sure.
Josh and I were trying to figure out ourselves is, you know, we watched a screener that was sent to us and, we were curious whether or not the insert effects was an intentional joke or a thing that was an early copy or not.
Very intentional.
Okay. It would work either way, quite frankly.
And that, I will say, is one of the few jokes that is venue specific. Because
yeah.
I totally get why when people get online screeners, they would be confused.
Totally.
100% get that.
Yeah.
Because, like, all the time I've, like, accidentally sent people work prints and stuff. It happens constantly.
Sure.
I will say, if you're, like, holding the Blu-ray or DVD, or if you're, like, in a theater, the joke sells way better.
Oh, yeah,
because,
I bet.
Because the intentionality is immediately recognized.
I mean, I laughed regardless. As soon as I saw it, I started laughing, you know, so.
Yeah. No, and I'm happy that a lot of people have queued. That's the moment you know what movie you're watching.
Sure.
And it comes at, like, second 80. So yeah. It's like, I totally get why if somebody is sitting down for the first time and they're not really aware of what they're about to get into, why that would happen. And the response would be, what? but yes, that was very intentional. We actually had the money to go back and shoot a car explosion. And I boldly decided not to because I thought that title card was way funnier than anything that we would actually end up shooting.
That's an auteur decision right there, man.
It truly was. Thank you. I'll give myself a little cred for bravely deciding to use, you know, text and just see what happens.
Beautiful.
Yeah, intentional.
Well, right on, Brendan. Thank you again so much for being here. This was a great conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, I'm Josh Bell.
I'm Jason Harris. Hey, Josh, we're friends in real life, but we're also co-hosts on this new podcast called
Awesome Movie Year, where we take a look back at an awesome year for movies and do a deep dive looking at movies, including the Best Picture winner, the biggest movie at the box office, future cult classics, and more.
Including the biggest flop. And this season, we're doing 1994. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. That could be Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify. We're all over the web as well. We've got Awesome Movie Year on all the socials and awesomemovieyear.com. So please like us, subscribe, and if you do like us, give us a 5-star rating because we love you.
All right. So I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Brendan Steer, the writer-director of The Velocipastor. And I hope you checked out The Velocipastor because, like we said on the main episode, it actually is a lot of fun. I was not expecting to enjoy it as much as I did. It's worth checking out. So that does it for this week. We got a whole bunch of Piecing It Together coming up. We actually had a couple of episodes recorded, but we wanted to get these Velocipastor episodes out because the movie had just come out. So those other episodes are going to come out next week. We've got The Last Black Man in San Francisco coming up next. And then we'll go from there. We got a few to choose from. I'm not sure what order the rest of them will be, but lots of episodes coming your way. So make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice. You could also rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts if you enjoy it. And you could follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. You can also join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all these movies. And we do a bunch of contests in there too, so it's really a good idea to join the group and come join a bunch of cool people talking about movies. So that does it for today. You know what? One other thing before I leave you guys with a piece of music. our first live show is confirmed. We're still getting all the details together, but it's actually going to be during the Sin City Horror Fest here in Las Vegas at the Brendan Palms Movie Theater. It's going to be on a local feature film called The Head, and they're screening it on the closing day of the festival, and right after it plays, Josh Bell is actually going to be joining me, as well as festival organizer Drew Marvick, and as well as the film's director. And so it's going to be a really interesting experiment, but I have always wanted to do some live episodes of Piecing It Together, so it should be a lot of fun. I will be posting more information about that soon. I don't have exact times or, you know, how you can get tickets or any of that kind of stuff yet, but I will be posting more info about it soon, so just follow the social medias and you will get plenty more information soon. So let's leave you guys with a piece of music as we always do. And, you know, I know I've played this before on the show, but there's a indie horror film that I did some music for. I played the Bus Party to Hell song on the main Velocipastor episode, so I don't want to play a piece from another horror indie film that I've done music for. This is the main theme from the film Heidi, which is like a found footage scary doll movie that actually came out before Annabelle. I gotta give him some credit, but yeah, this is the main theme track from that film, so enjoy this. It's actually available as a single on my iTunes and Spotify and all that stuff, so enjoy the track, and if you like it, it is available out there, but you should also go check out the movie, Heidi, which is available on Amazon Prime.
And all points west.